There we go. How about that?
That is much better.
Oh, that's superior.
It is. It helps to be close to the microphone.
Did you get that, Brian?
Can you hear me now?
But yeah. Oh, intro thing.
Yes.
You have an intro thing?
No, we don't yet. We this is like the last episode too was literally just so start this, talking.
So I did listen to the first 10 minutes of the last one. So.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so this is the intro. We have now begun the intro.
Excellent.
So welcome to Dead Zone the podcast with Rick.
Hi.
And Brian.
I can't help it. I know it's a podcast, but I'm still animating. I still wave.
They didn't see
I
the
know
wave.
They didn't see the wave.
But our special guest, Jeff Burbage, did.
Hi. Yeah. Fantastically charismatic wave. You're missing out because this isn't on video.
Yeah.
Thank God.
But, yeah, so thank you for stopping by the Lansing area. I know you're in town to play some Dreadball.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is going to be a lot of fun to do.
It always is.
Always is. So, so we got a couple of things to talk about.
We do.
The episode. I'm going to say probably be a little careful about
knocking.
I'm sorry.
He has to yell at me all the time when we record at my house.
I yell
always
at myself too.
Hit my table.
All right. My hands are in my lap.
I appreciate that.
It's a thing.
No, it's all good. But yeah, so we had a couple of things. We wanted to do a quick unit highlight for our Dead Zone stuff. Had a good section on Dreadball with obviously our special guest.
Most important.
Well,
section maybe. We'll see. And just kind of wrap up with some hobby stuff and everything else that's going on.
Sure, sounds good to me.
Cool.
Welcome to the Dead Zone Podcast. Dead Zone is the sci-fi tabletop.
So, to start off with some Dead Zone funness, I know for like community spotlight, we can do that later.
Sure.
But so the big thing we wanted to talk about for our unit highlight this month was that Maison Labs, Guard Commander Graves.
Yes. So Maison Labs. So with the whole start of this whole podcast, we switched. We decided that no more Rebs. And I had to...
We're rotating. We'll come back to that.
No more Rebs. Right, yeah. No more Rebs. Because you're bringing them to Adeptcon, right?
I am, yeah.
So he doesn't have to play Rebs anymore.
I don't have
to. He made my list for me, so
it's like I'm there in spirit.
That's right.
Whatever.
No more Rebs. They're called Brian Squad or something.
Brian's Revenge.
Brian Company.
Yeah.
Well, so obviously he's playing Marauders now, and I retired Enforcers, Plague.
Marauders.
I retired them for now.
And you've gotten Maison?
I've gotten Maison Labs, and we sat down and we played kind of a new point level for us, 175 points.
Yeah.
We wanted to try it out.
Which was kind of neat.
Yeah. But we also wanted to try a different scenery setup.
Mm-hmm.
So we did this... Almost like a Mars kind of thing. We had some rocks.
You used the red mat?
Yeah, we used the red mat. Put some uncertain scenery. Actually did the
Friends
tower.
Friends of the show.
Nice looking stuff.
Yeah, it's
so much sweet. I want the new stuff so bad. Have you seen the new stuff?
Probably. I mean, I see all your
posts. It's roadways. No, I don't have it
yet. Oh, you haven't posted that one?
I know I shared it at some point.
The roadways?
Yeah, but it's roadways. It's 28 millimeter roadways.
Nice.
Which we totally want to get it and do like a Strider battle.
Yeah.
And they plug
you
into
get
those
the,
corners.
I don't know if you've seen the new Marvel Crisis Protocol game.
I've heard about it.
There's an expansion coming out with like a dump truck and an Oscorp truck in that scale.
We could totally use that on...
Like a dump truck, all, like, oh, yeah, all weathered up, would look great on like a sci-fi
that would be perfect. Road,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we did that, and we actually, we put a river on it, because I had this, like, the first time I did terrain, made a horrible river.
Yeah, it looked nice.
And a couple other little scenery pieces, and...
Did you have any rules for water?
We didn't. We talked about it.
We talked about some ideas.
But we didn't use them this time. Because the way everything laid out, you could still pretty much see the grid. Mm-hmm. And so there was only a couple mm-hmm. spots that we were like, yeah, that's an... See, I'm doing it again. Yeah, I know we're not on camera.
Your point. Rick is pointing to an invisible map that that's
right there.
Those of us recording can see. So, but yeah, it was really neat because it was much more organic.
Yeah.
So many of, you know... The dead zone matchups, because they're kind of limited by that cube structure, you tend to just kind of default to these bombed out structures or solid structure, you know, prefab yeah. structures, things like that. There's not, it's not as flexible to play with the more organic scenery,
yeah.
but you know, where if you're a little creative with how you set it up and you
it
make
took
sure
us like five times to get that hole to stay on the rocks.
Yeah, the angle was a little
sharp.
Yeah,
that's tough doing organic in a game that's set up for like geometric cubes.
Right. Yeah. But I think like with a little bit of ingenuity and engineering, you can certainly put together scenery that fits that kind of structure so that your miniatures and everything can sit on them comfortably without slipping and sliding and falling off and maybe dying.
Yeah, do a little bit of change on like rock forms that are more squarish
mm-hmm.
To go in that cube.
But it was even fun to just take like we had, you know, your typical hill sections for a mass battle kind of just grassland thing. And if you stack them up on top of each other, they all kind of flies out.
Yep, we put it up to a cube, and all of a sudden we had a canyon.
Yeah. And it kind of had a nice, fun, alien-esque feel to, you know, how erosion could work on a random alien planet.
Right.
Sure.
So that's just science.
Dun, dun, dun. So, yeah, anyways, we played the game at 175 points. We had a lot of fun. I've enjoyed learning more about the Maison Labs. So it's just funny that it went from a Rebs leader,
mm-hmm.
Last episode that we did the unit highlight on, to this week we're doing
the Maison Labs. Graves? Is that
Graves?
Yep.
Commander Graves.
Oh, okay. It's not the guy with the arms.
Yeah,
not Dr. Octopus. It's, okay.
Copyright.
Yeah.
So it's Guard Commander Graves, which comes with the Star Saga core set, is one of the first early bosses that you actually can run into in that game. So he got added into Maison Labs' army list here. And just kind of run through his stats real quick.
That's in Escalation, right?
Yeah.
This is out of Escalation. So he's got like 1-2 move, typical human person. One armor, which is not bad for a typical human person.
Which is actually pretty high, actually, for Maison Labs. There's not a lot of armor in the Maison Labs list.
He's got, you know, size 1, shoot 4, fight 5, survive 5, tactician 1, strategist. By default, he comes with a laser pistol, which has way to fire 1 on it. And bionic arm, which is a fun AP1 knockback melee weapon. So, fight 9 fighters.
Remind me what strategist does.
So, yeah. So, strategist is the ability where you get to reroll 1 failed recon dice. So, at the very beginning of the game, if this guy is your commander, you could potentially reroll a failed recon test and maybe get the first strike that you want.
You're going to make me trying to remember how to play Dead Zone here?
That's almost exactly what it is.
Oh, yeah, you remember.
Recon, right? That's who goes first, right?
Yeah. Yep.
We use D8s.
Right.
They explode just
like the big sloppy D6.
Whatever.
With 2 more sides. All right. He's got a splat... or special army ability, head of security. So that's where you can spend your special army result to give the active model a free fire for effect action. You may also use, you may only use this once per activation. So basically, they can get a free shot to try and pin it.
The
single
suppression
unit.
Shot.
Yeah, which gives you an extra dice.
But it only suppresses.
Yeah, it does no damage, but it knocks them down.
Yeah. But you do get, you know, an extra dice on that roll as well. Then Recon 5, 22 points and 2 victory points.
Okay. So cheap.
Cheap is a big thing for this guy.
Yeah. I mean, his ability's not very good, really.
Actually,
when used in combo.
When used in combo. So one of the things about, like, we saw, so he was playing Marauders. So they're a heavy shooter. They're decent at melee, but they're good at shooting. My Maison list was almost all melee. I used the Doctor, just because.
That's the guy with the big robotic.
Yeah. Yeah, and his splat allows you to raise your own guys after they die to create plague victims. Which, amusingly enough, really
isn't
worked
that,
out.
Isn't that one of the plague guys has that ability?
Sort of.
Okay.
So the plague one is you can spend a splat to res one of the guys that you just killed.
Oh, as a zombie.
As a zombie.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So with the Doctor, you can res one of your guys that just died and turn them into a plague victim. Which, it goes back and forth. People don't really like it because it adds victory points. Because, yeah, you get the victory points for killing my guy, and then all of a sudden I give you another guy that potentially kill.
Yeah,
yeah.
Can you only res him once? Like, if you get...
It's a splat.
Yeah, so you can res the same guy over and over and over.
So the mission that we played...
that checks out.
Yeah.
It does. The mission we played actually had no victory points from kills. You had... What was the mission called again?
It was called the Stop the Signal.
Which is out of escalation.
Yep.
So it's the center point, the center four cubes, and you put like a tower there. And you have to get up there and spend a long action to send out the signal to get victory points. And that's how you win the game. So there's no killing victory points.
Yeah.
So my plague victims were fine. So I'm like, oh, cool, another one.
Yep. That didn't help me much.
I bet you enjoyed that.
Listen, we did with that scenario. Hey, I have the creaky chair today.
You do?
What do you know?
Yay, it's not me.
It's still here.
We got you covered, Beetle.
With that that scenario, like, another thing is there's supposed to be like an orbital bombardment thing going on, or just a bombardment. We kind of forgot about that. Mm. So there's a lot already going on in that map. So.
There was.
But anyway, so Commander Graves is kind of falls into that category of being more of a combative leader. Like, he can hold his own in a fight.
Yeah, I mean, he fights on a 4, which is...
Shoots on a 4, fights on a 5.
Oh, dang it. I read it backwards.
That's okay. but even so, like, fighting on a 5, but with AP1 and knockback, that makes him pretty formidable. To defend himself in there. And I think with his, you know, using that head of security ability in conjunction with,
yes,
with a more melee-centric team, that could really tip that
well,
scale.
Well, yeah, because you have, like, the plague victims are a 2-3 movement, so very plaguey. Big surprise. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you use that free action to attempt to suppress somebody, and then you do a sprint. And you're in melee, and they're knocked down, so they're pinned, so they can't fight back.
Yeah.
Are you starting to pick up on the remembering the dead zone?
Yeah, sort of.
But yeah, even like just for him, because he's got
well,
this laser pistol.
Bionic arm.
This laser pistol. It's weird that he's got a way to fire pistol, but good for him.
I mean, way to fire to me just feels like it's the skill of the guy more than the weapon.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean. Heavy machine guns have about the same way to fire on them. But
I guess. Yeah.
But he's also fun to trick out with different guns.
Well, yeah. Small arms and all light.
Small arms, all light. Leader for when more of those turn up. But our buddy Dom has been playing Maison Labs for a while now. He's had great success giving this guy a grenade launcher.
I mean...
And using
great success in non-tournament games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, his dice just don't like him during tournaments.
Because I'm pretty sure I played him twice in the last tournament, and it didn't go well for him two times.
His dice sometimes just don't like him.
Yeah.
But I've played against him a lot, and they have been a lot closer games, and a couple that he's even pulled wins out of. But the grenade launcher shooting on fours is really solid.
I mean, indirect fire is indirect crazy fire good.
In general.
Yes.
I like having it. I hate fighting against it.
Yep.
Yeah. And I was also looking, like, even giving him, like, a DMR for the same amount of points as a grenade launcher, range 8, that also comes with the holosight built in. So he's, you know, got 4 dice.
Yeah, it's that shooting mini on sniper fours rifle.
With armor 1, not a bad guy to have around. So again, and that would just tip his points up to 30, which is, you know, nothing too crazy for a leader.
Do Maison Labs have a sniper unit as a faction?
They have the Rangers.
Yeah,
the Specialists.
The Blackwing Rangers.
They kind of
do the same thing that the Enforcers do, where they don't have an actual sniper like the Rebs.
Yep.
Yeah, or the Marauders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'd be going with the Ranger and then giving
Enforcers
them.
Do have a sniper, right?
They got 2.
Yeah, I thought Rick just said they didn't have one. Didn't you? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I saw an Enforcer sniper. He's got like a cloak and he's kneeled down with a big long rifle.
Which is the Enforcer Specialist. You actually still have to pay for the rifle.
So oh, really?
It's, yeah. He doesn't come stock with a sniper rifle.
Okay. That's,
like, the leader
that's
that we were talking
you, that's
about.
What you mean.
That's your distinction.
Yeah. Okay.
But there are some factions that cannot even buy
correct.
A sniper rifle.
Yeah.
Such as Maison Labs.
Oh, that's too bad for them.
Yeah, the closest they have is that Holosight one.
Yeah. Which, again, is not bad. It's a pretty good
anything rifle. That gives you an extra dice is fantastic.
Yes.
We'll say Subject 901 is crazy.
So Graves, would you guys give him like a thumbs up or a thumbs down? Would you take him as your commander?
I could see myself taking him as a commander. I've always kind of leaned more towards those units that are a bit more combat-centric as leaders.
Yeah. I think after playing the Doctor, like I really enjoy the raising the dead as a plague player, but now I'm a Maison Labs player, so I'll probably take it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll play around with it.
Yeah, I usually go for like the big point commander when I play a faction, just because they're more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to play, but to paint and the whole thing.
Yeah.
They're just
yeah.
more fun.
Yeah, I mean, he is kind
of... But the point savings is always nice to then throw in like a big unit of some sort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's got a great, solid
block
core to him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about his ability. It doesn't seem great to me, but he's cheap. So. Yeah.
And I think like that could really come in handy. Like that's basically getting everyone a free shot, and then you can pin them down to let your melee team move in, slow their progress. Like pinning individuals, like the Fire for Effect, I think a lot of people don't quite know how to use it
or don't know when
to use it.
Don't know when to use it is probably more accurate.
It's building up to that. It's as close as you're going to get to chess in my head. I mean, there's other people I'm sure play the game like chess, just like Dreadball.
Chess, you mean like Loka?
Sure. Which I've never played, unfortunately.
Yeah, I haven't either.
But it's that thinking 2-3 steps down the road. But it's also like blocking things from happening because you have a lot, like with the plague specifically, you have almost an entire faction that can move on 2-3. That's kind of irritating because if they sprint, they're already across the board on you. And if you're a shooting faction, you need them to stay away. That Fire for Effect allows you to pin all of their guys in that front row. So they can't sprint essentially is what happens because they have to spend an action to stand up. So then they could only move that 2. Which, that helps. Plus you have the pinning them to set up for a melee attack. So it's definitely useful. I'm a big fan of it. I did a lot of that with my enforcers.
Yeah.
With my assault enforcers, all of them had rapid fire.
Yeah.
To do that specifically, to get that pin.
And they all come with rapid fire,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that from first edition.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a good, like, Maison Labs itself has kind of been a good kind of synergy,
yeah,
team in general, because it is a combination of a lot of the core of the GCPS and then some of the bigger heavy hitters from Plague,
yeah,
show up there, and now we've got some
Dreadball guys.
Dreadball guys.
I mean, you got to make the game more interesting somehow.
Do you recommend round bases for the Dreadball minis coming, or keeping them on hexes?
Okay, so am I saying it right, Krastivore?
Which guy? I guess.
Okay, I'm not alone.
I'm not sure that's his name in Dreadball. I think it's like, okay, Scarathron or something. So, maybe the type of creature is a,
yeah,
correct. What is it? Krastidor?
Krastivore.
Yeah, and I think his actual name, the named unit in Dreadball, is something like Scarathron.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I would keep him on the Dreadball base. Yeah. He doesn't fit on the round base at all.
He's a bit of a big boy.
But anyway, Maison Labs is a really fascinating faction that has only been around just kind of like a year or two.
Yeah.
I think they came out in Escalation.
They came out with Escalation.
No, they came out with...
Did they come out with Outbreak?
No, Outbreak. Because Outbreak was started.
Yeah, because then Nameless. They got... See how much I paid attention to Maison Labs.
all the expansions, some of them kind of flow together, but like,
yeah.
Escalation has been a great leveling of the playing field, I feel. Yeah, if you want to try out that Resident Evil Umbrella Corp-esque faction,
it's
Maison Labs is where to go. So, with that, I think we can kind of move on to some Dreadball stuff.
Finally.
Dun, dun, dun.
I was trying to look up the giant guy's name in Dreadball here. It's bugging me now. He's one of the ones I've used the least. He's cool looking,
mm-hmm,
but...
I now need to get a second one for my Maison Labs.
I might have one hanging around. I'll take a look for you.
I tried looking at it. I think I only have like one other one in that core box.
They had a great giant sale.
Oh, yeah.
They did.
I don't know if it was Black Friday or before...
It was actually before, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like $20.
It was like the complete Giants. It was part of the, what they call it, the draft or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good deal. You got all the Giants except for the Territon, I think.
Mm.
I don't think you got Dozer, but you got all the rest.
Dozer might have been in...
Dozer came in the original Ultimate box set, I think.
Okay.
Or was it something like that.
So, Giants and Dreadball.
Yeah. Scarathron. Scarathron.
Do they have any like info on him as far as...
Yeah.
Is he also a spider from another dimension?
Yeah. So the chorus come from a nightmare dimension full of all manner of strange and malevolent creatures, which goes some way towards explaining the chorus themselves, but fewer as terrifying as the Krastivore.
Krastivore.
Yeah, right. So that's the species is the Krastivore.
All right. Cool.
So it's funny because the chorus are kind of like... They look kind of like the baddies in that Thanos was using in
the Marvel. Well, kind of.
The multi-armed.
In Infinity War, when they were breaking through the barrier at Wakanda.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of.
So there's a paint scheme for you guys.
Although,
if you
much similar, paint. More similar to those is in the nightmare creatures from, I don't know if it's Vanguard or Kinzul.
Oh, Nightstalkers.
Nightstalkers.
Yeah. When you were reading that, I'm like, I have some Nightstalkers.
I wonder what dimension.
Chorus are a lot of fun, though. I played them in a tournament, and I took the captain. It was one of these, like, you get 1,200 points, build your team. So I put the captain in there, and there's a captain card called, it's something like, That's Where I Left It. And basically... When a guy goes through a portal, you play the card, and he comes out of the portal with a ball he found in the other dimension, right? So you set up the portal right beside their scoring zone. It doesn't even matter where the ball is on the field. You don't have to get it as long as you make your roll to make it through the portal. It's amazingly powerful and incredibly frustrating for your opponent. You zip into the portal, you pop out. Hey, look, now I've got a ball. You know, strike points on the board.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun card.
There's some great combinations out there for different teams, both like captains, MVPs, and...
So, the combination. So, obviously, I'm more the Dead Zone player. In Dreadball, when can you use Giants? Can you use them in a regular game?
Right, so they're just MVPs.
Okay.
Big MVPs.
Yeah, a Giant is sort of their type, and being a Giant gives them special abilities. There's like a sort of standard set of things a Giant gets.
So like in a league, I could actually take a Giant.
Yes. If you had points, you could hire them for a single game for the listed cost in the book, or you could add him to your roster for an extra 150 on top of his base cost.
Huh. So it's a little expensive.
It's very expensive. But we had a guy in our last league, he did it. He bought Dozer for his Terraton team, like, right before the playoffs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. She didn't work as well as he'd hoped. Mm-hmm. You know, just because you get overconfident, you think they're unstoppable.
Right, right.
But they become the focus of your opponent's attention to deal with them. And
very much like Dead Zone,
yeah,
when you bring the big, nasty. It's like a lot of attention gets focused there, and sometimes clever players might find a way to capitalize on that.
But, I mean, I can't remember Dozer's exact cost. It's somewhere around between 200 and 250 points. Plus the 150 to permanently put her on the roster made her a very expensive buy for him.
Mm-hmm.
But once she's on your roster, she gets the benefit of ranking up.
Right.
So not only is it Dozer, it's Dozer plus new abilities, increased stats, the whole thing.
Nice.
Yes.
So like, we've talked on the last episode a little bit about like a league in a day kind of event, and a little bit about our league, which is still pretty small.
I was gonna ask how your league's going.
It's small. Going. It's small.
how small? Like beyond.
We have four players.
There are four players.
That's what we had in our first season.
Yeah. So trying to get it to be more of a regular thing that a couple of us get together and like, play.
I'm fortunate that my friend Rob. I think you guys have met Rob.
Yeah.
He's totally taken the reins, organizing our league,
recruiting
people for the league. And so we've gone from 4 in season 1 to 6 in season 2. And we're going to have 8 players in season 3 starting in January.
Right on.
Yeah, so it's going really well.
So before we jump into the league talk, because this is where you guys are going to take over. And I'm just going to be like, yeah, cool. That works. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jeff, how long have you been playing Dreadball?
You're maybe trying to remember.
That's a good start.
Yeah, it would be. I think Dreadball went to Kickstarter in 2012, if I remember correctly. And I kickstarted it. I was out of miniatures for a long time at that point. I played back in like 2000, 2001, some Games Workshop games.
Sure.
And then the people I played with dropped out. I had no one to play with. I stopped playing miniatures games. So I'd been playing just board games and stuff. But I really like painting miniatures. I wanted to get back into it. And I thought I'd give Blood Bowl a shot. Because it's, you know, small number of miniatures. It seems very popular, even though it's out of print at this point. And then... you know, I'd been on Kickstarter. It was fairly new, but I'd been around. I'd kickstarted a few things, like nothing that cool or anything. And then I just happened upon Dreadball because I was on Kickstarter looking around at games, and I found it, and I was like, well, this is perfect because sci-fi is better than fantasy in every way possible. So Blood Bowl can go away. I'm going to kickstart Dreadball. So I went pretty much all in. I mean, I didn't get some of like the acrylic pitches and the t-shirts and all the custom dice and stuff, but I got all the teams, the acrylic upgrade tokens, and all the extra alternate poses and everything. And then when it finally delivered, I took the box and I threw it in the corner of the room where it sat for I don't even know how long, right? As Kickstarters sometimes do.
Yeah, sure.
I had no one to play it with. I'd been out of the hobby, so it wasn't like I was all ready to get into it again.
Right.
I had to get paints again, so all my GW paint pots had dried up as they are wont to do. Fortunately, probably the Christmas, around the same time, my wife bought me an Army Painter starter set because she knew I wanted to get back into it.
Good type.
Yeah. Mm. So I got all those paints. I can't remember how many, like 90 or 80 or something paints in that starter set. Yeah, it was the like mega 80. Set. At the time, the new ones are even bigger because they've added new colors. But
they've invented new colors.
Yeah. And so I was sort of ready to go. But it still just sat in the box. I didn't really have anyone to play it with.
Sure.
But I was on Board Game Geek.
Yep.
That old site for games before Facebook came along.
It looks about the same, I think.
I think they've reskinned it recently. It got a bit of an upgrade. But I had bought the little micro icon or whatever for Dreadball and added it to my logo or my avatar. And some guy on there saw that I liked it, realized I lived an hour or half hour from his house, and he sent me a message on Board Game Geek. And he's like, I see you like Dreadball. We're just getting into it. Would you like to come over and we'll try a game to learn?
Nice.
And I'm not the most social person. And I kind of, do I want to go out to some stranger's house? So I took a gamble, and I was like, yes, I would like to play the game. I've paid for it. Meeting new people, I'll deal with it. It's not so bad. So I went to the guy's house. I painted up my team. I went with the humans. This was the old first edition where it was humans and marauders in the basic set.
Yep.
I figured I'd start with that.
Sure.
He played marauders. I played humans. Humans always win that matchup in first edition, so I totally won. And that was it. I was into it. I'd painted the team. I'd got the box open. And then I just started looking around for more people to play with. I think at the time we organized a small league, he and I and two of his other friends. And
four people.
Yeah. It was super unorganized, that league. It was just sort of like, let's meet up and you'll play,
so it's
this guy, and you'll play that guy, and we'll do the points. And there was no structure to it. There was no end point. It was just like, let's play sort of a campaign more than league.
Sure.
Yeah.
So then you go from that, and you flash forward to the end of first edition?
Well, so from there, I guess I went to an Adepticon. Bitten the bullet to go out and meet new people. I was like, I'm going to go to Adepticon.
Let's bite a really big bullet.
I knew nobody at Adepticon. I just knew it was a big gaming con, and they had a Dreadball tournament. And so I painted my team, which was the Sphere.
Solid go-to.
headed off to Adepticon to play. And it was, I think I can't remember if it was the second or third year they'd done the tournament at Adepticon. I think it was maybe the third year. So that would be 2015 at this point, I guess. If it came out in 2012, maybe 2015. And there were like 20 people in the tournament.
Oh, wow.
Big turnout. And, I met all kinds of people there. But people who I'm good friends with today, John Jack was playing in the tournament.
Could you imagine playing against John Jack?
Mike Mueller was running it just as he did for many years.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Lee was there, and I met Lee there for the first time.
He's really cool.
Is that when you met Crazy A?
No. Andrew was not at that tournament. I met all the Chicago guys they were quite into it at the time. I met Pat.
Mm.
I don't know if he was at the tournament. He wasn't playing, but he was obviously around at Adepticon. Yeah. I think I probably met him at the open night that year.
Sure.
And it was so much fun. I basically had a big, way too big hotel room suite to myself. where I was painting miniatures in the hotel room for Mech Zone. John Politis had done Mech Zone for the first time.
Oh, the first Mech Zone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so I was painting my Strider in the hotel room, getting ready for Mech Zone at open night.
Nice.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
So how do you jump from that to, well, if they don't know, you're also on the rules committee for it.
Right.
Your name's in that book.
It is.
Your name is in the
book. It is.
My phone is not the book.
Yeah. It's a good proxy. Yeah. So, I mean, I just got more and more into it. So I traveled to Adepticon, met all the Chicago guys. So I started going back because they did regional tournaments in Chicago. I'd drive back and we'd just do a tournament. I then started driving to Washington for tournaments. I went to a Gen Con. I've only been to one Gen Con, but it was just to play Dreadball. That's, I think, where I met Andrew for the first time.
Okay.
Oh, that makes sense.
Then I went to Washington to tournaments he was organizing in D.C. I think the first time I went, I stayed in a hotel. And then after that, one of his, him or his friends put me up in their
oh,
places.
Nice.
Yeah. And I don't know how many times I've driven back and forth. And I basically gave myself a radius. Anywhere I could get to within 8 hours of driving, I would drive to play in a Dreadball tournament.
And conveniently, we're closer than Chicago.
You are. You're really the closest.
Yeah.
Lee in Ohio is about the same, which is Origins. So I did Origins as well. So yeah, that's the three big tournaments: Origins, Gen Con, and Adepticon.
Mm-hmm.
And Gen Con was way too big, too busy, too many people for me. I wanted to do it once. Great. It was great fun, but I don't go back usually. It's just too much. Yeah.
It's a big thing.
And so I was getting really, really into it. And then when they were doing the Extreme Kickstarter, which was adding, you know, season 4, 5, and 6 to first edition, and the Extreme game, which it's a great game. I just wish it wasn't a separate game. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I got on the playtesting list for Extreme. I basically just, you know, I can't remember. I think I probably just asked. I said, or they were looking for playtesters. I don't remember.
Sure.
But my name's in that book as well as a playtester.
Nice.
You know, we printed out the map on paper. We used our proxy players and played Extreme. Extreme, if you haven't played it.
I have not played Extreme.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
You have it, don't you?
I have it, yeah.
I mean, if you didn't, it was $20.
Yeah.
I mean, that's $20 for three teams that are totally usable in Dreadball. You can't get a better price.
It's
the I think it was convicts? Even cheaper. I think it was $15.
Yeah,
they were about $5 a team. You got three teams.
It was pretty cheap.
The Convicts.
The
Khaleesi. And the Extreme team.
Oh, okay.
Which was Ronnie's Rejects.
The free agents or MVPs from Extreme. In second edition, they organized that into a team, so you could still use those miniatures.
Okay.
It's a great fun game, Extreme. It plays differently, but it's so much fun. It's just, it's way more setup and way more cleanup because of all the little bits of terrain and tokens. And if you're going to sit down to play Dreadball, it's so much faster to play the original versus Extreme.
Sure.
You know, I've been talking with Lee and we'd really like to try and get some of those Extreme elements back into some form of Dreadball because they're fun.
Yeah, because you guys also do Breadball.
Yes, yeah, we have our blog.
Your blog. But you guys, I mean, you've put out recently with the 3 versus 3.
Yeah, Lee and I worked on 3 versus 3. We play tested it a bit. I think Lee's actually expanded it a bit since we did that with more of the Extreme stuff.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I haven't play tested
nice
that one with him yet.
We say nice a lot.
Everything is nice.
It's nice.
It's the far-flung future where things are nice.
It's impossible.
I am Canadian. We're nice. So from there, I was playtesting that. And then they started talking, I think at Adepticon, they mentioned, we're going to do a second edition. They sort of said we were going to do, so they said second edition, but there was no suggestion of what that would be.
Okay.
At the time, people really just wanted one book. Because first edition had come out, in a different book for every season. There were six seasons, so there were six rule books.
And each of those rule books only had a few teams in it,
didn't four they? Teams per four book. Teams, each okay. season had four teams, which is a lot. That's 20, what is six times four? 24 teams. Yeah. And the Martian team, so there were 25. And, you know, everyone just wanted one book. Like, yeah. We like the rules. The game is great. It needs no changes. Give us one book. That's not what Mandic wanted to do. They wanted more models and more of a rules change.
And they did, too.
Yeah, they did four more teams. And, like I said, they got the Extreme team as a team in second edition. And basically, they're like, okay, and we're going to... If anyone's interested in helping with the rules committee, let us know. We'll consider it. You know, we've got a rules committee, but, you know, there's always room for change. And I was all over that just because I like the game so much. So I think I messaged Ron. I might have emailed Ronnie directly because he was the one who said it at open night. And it was like, well, you know, the rules committee's full. Can't get you on the rules committee, but you can be an alpha play tester. I was like, well, if that's what you got, I'll take it. And I sort of, you know, got Andrew in too. We're like, you know, two of the biggest fans. Let's get in there. Lee was already on the rules committee. Lee had been on the rules committee in first edition.
Nice.
Wow.
Lee was on there a long time. He helped develop the Galactic expansion, the Azure Forest stuff, I think. And,
oh, nice.
And he did some of the Extreme stuff. And
right on.
Yeah. And so we got on, like, I don't know if it was, might have been Discord, I don't know, some sort of chat. No,
Slack, maybe?
Yeah, Slack. It was Slack. And so all of us are...
Again, I'll just sit here with this blank
look. It's just a chat, right? It's a chat program. Yeah.
Sure.
So we get in there, and there's the rules committee and the alpha testers, and there's no structure. There's no organization. The management is not fantastic, and so it all blends together. And as the alpha testers, we have just as much input as anyone on the rules committee to a point where, you know, we're finally like, look, we've done just as much. Can we please be listed as, you know, rules committee people in the rule book?
Sure.
Yes, sure. And we're restructuring the rules committee. So, you know, who's going to stay? Who's going to go? And, you know, when all the cuts were done... All the reorganization, who was actually making the time and had the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because there's a lot that...
It came down to me and Lee and Andrew. And ultimately it's because we were all in the same time zone. We were all in North America. We were all in the same time zone. We could all communicate. And we'd get together several times a year at cons. And we could work on stuff face to face. And that's where it is now.
Well, so... I mean, I never played first edition. Yeah. I've played a handful of games in second edition with the League, and I love what you guys have done with it. I would rather play Dead Zone. It's just a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. It's a ripoff of Red Ball anyway.
Whatever. But yeah, it's great what you guys have done from the rules committee and some of the stuff that you guys have brought out as part of Bread Doll too.
Right.
That combination to create this game and allow people to go to these tournaments. So, as a rules committee player and rules committee member and player for as long as you have,
right? What's your North American champion?
North American champion. Yep. What's your favorite part about Dreadball?
I like how quick the game is to set up, to transport, to put away. Like, it's just so portable.
Yeah, it's amazing. You have this nice little case, and you have, like, 20 teams in it, and we go to play Dead Zone, and I have case after case.
Yeah, it's so easy to get to the table. It's so easy to teach a new player.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's always fun, whether you win or lose, because it's never a blowout. Or very rarely. Okay. Like,
depends on who you're playing.
Yeah, but I mean, there's always back and forth.
Yeah.
You always get great, you know, cinematic moments with great, you know, rolls, the exploding sixes.
love that part.
As interesting as, you know, the exploding eights are similar, but because of the spread, there's less numbers on the six, so the sixes explode more often. You get more of those.
Well, it's more that cinematic part.
Yeah.
Because it really is. I mean, because, like, our game last month, with that, the no exploding sixes on that. That was just dropping the ball constantly.
Four or five times.
And he's surrounded by me. Yeah. And I can't touch nothing. Yeah. it's just dropping the ball.
I just played a game this past Wednesday with a guy who, it's only a second game. He messaged me, I think, through the Fanatics group on Facebook. You know, we sort of saw we're both in Canada, and it's like, do you want to play? And it's like, I'd love to play and show you how to play. And he beat me by 1 point in the 14th rush.
Nice.
I was up by 1 point going into that last rush, and he drained a two-pointer and beat me by one. And, like, the whole game was big moments. Like, he'd try and slam me, and it, you know, the odds were entirely in his favor. Five dice to, like, one, and he'd roll one success, and I'd roll, like, a chain of sixes up to, like, four.
That was like one of my first games with you when I met you up, when we met you up in Port Huron.
Yeah.
The other thing that I like about Dreadball and Dead Zone and the other small skirmish games is you have fun even if you lose.
Right, exactly. Because
there's so much going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was playing the Matsudan, who, they're a very strong team, like, literally and overall.
Yeah.
You know, they've got great skill, great strength. Their weakness is their movement. It's very hard to get them up and down the field with a move of four.
Four, yeah.
And they can't foul. So you can never...
They're honorable.
Right. You can't pull any of that, you know, I gotta get stuff done, you know, dirty trick, you know, hit him in the back. You just can't. And I took so many shots that I completely whiffed with a skill of three and re-rolls.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, one, two, re-roll, two, two, like one. I couldn't get it done. I took so many shots at the four-pointer and the three-pointer. And, you know, several times I could see he thought he was finished. Like, he thought, oh, this is a blowout. I can't. These Matsudan are too good. I can't win. He was doing the Neobots, which are, they're very, very average stats across the board, all fours. You know, meanwhile, I'm rolling three up on slams and ball pickups and throws, and he's very jealous of my three-plus rolls.
Oh, yeah.
And he thinks it's over, but, I mean, he won the game. Like, I, you know, it just happens. You get a chain of sixes, or your opponent gets some ones. Strategic use of your cheerleaders. We threw some cheerleaders into the game because he hadn't played them before.
Sure, sure.
And assistant coaches, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Like, Dreadball, in particular, like, really excels at those dramatic moments with built right into the mechanics. So, like, doubling on a roll will always give you, like, something a little extra. You know, you've got your target number you're trying to hit. But if you get more, something good happens.
Yeah. Tripling for fan checks now.
Fan checks.
The cards for the rerolls is such a big thing in second edition, and it makes a huge difference to the game.
It really does.
Yeah. Like, you never feel, or rarely feel hopeless. Like, you're like, well, I only got one dice, but I got a reroll, it's not like I'm pinning everything on this one roll.
Tell me there's a chance.
Yeah.
And that's really the cool thing is, like, even with just that one dice, you can typically do, some people can make something amazing happen out of that.
Right.
And so, like, that's, yeah, I absolutely love that part of the game.
Yeah.
It is. It's a good game. I really do enjoy it. And luckily, finally, like, saying, okay, I'll do this.
Yeah.
And starting with the league and whatnot. But I'll tell you, still, without a doubt, my favorite part of Dreadball is Ultimate.
Ultimate is
I love the social aspect of Ultimate. Yeah. That there's more than just the game going on.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's that sneaky move, especially you, Brian.
What?
Yeah. Out of the blue.
Oh, I'm... Game's over.
I mean, the social... The social aspect might be one of the best things about the game in general, at least for me.
Yeah.
Like I don't know, if you listen to my story talking about it, I met so many friends all because of Dreadball. Like, you guys, you guys just because of Dreadball. Really.
Yeah.
Sure. I'll let you have that one.
I mean, no. I came to play Dead Zone, but... Also, to show you Dreadball.
We played a lot of Dreadball.
Yes, we played... Well, you played a lot more than I did, but...
Yes, I would maybe come to play Dead Zone, because, I mean, I've paid for it. I might have paid.
So it's not another box sitting in the corner. Right.
You have no idea how much unpainted, still bagged Dead Zone stuff I have.
Well, so say we.
Well, yeah.
Like, so much. Like, when we're talking about me playing Rebs at Adepticon, and I said, make me a list. I have everything. Like, don't even worry about it. I have every model. I've never played them.
Nice.
Like, I have models that some people, like, I had the resin leader alternate pose, who's basically the sniper.
The sniper pose.
I was complaining that there was no model for the sniper. And then, oh, look, I have one. It's this alternate pose leader.
Yeah.
She's crouching. She's got the sniper rifle. That's who that is.
The system works.
Yeah.
It'd be funny if they finally put, like, her in as the sniper picture.
Well, that would just upset people.
That would probably make
if there was a picture and they couldn't buy it.
Yeah.
I know it would upset me.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I love murder birds.
Sort of like that mob beast.
Those have been available. They're just not available right now.
The mob beast without the bomb on his back.
So hard to get.
Right?
Because
this is another case.
I have plenty of the ones with the bomb on the back.
Oh, I know. Mine are all like that. But I sat down to make my Marauder list. I think you helped me with my Marauder list. I'm like, again, I have everything. And you're like, well, Mob Beasts. And I'm like, wait. They all have bombs on their back. Where is the one without the... And
they're all going to explode.
I went through all my pieces. I'm like, did I misplace a bag of these minis? And I just could not find it. And I started asking some questions. And I'm like, oh, you can only get it in the brand new set as a box set.
Yeah.
Yeah, not cool. How are we doing for time?
Oh, plenty of time.
Plenty of time.
Just so much time.
Well,
yeah, I think the last episode was an hour and 20 minutes.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So how far are you guys into your league?
So we made it into ours was the second game. Our other two players have been trying to coordinate schedules and get their game.
Which I think they'll be able to get it in this week.
Yeah, upcoming week.
How do you set up your schedule with just four of you? What's the...
So far, it's just kind of been, I say, hey guys, how's it going? How's that game going?
You're playing so-and-so.
Yeah,
yeah.
But did you have a plan for how many games you're doing, and like with a playoff or anything like that?
We were going to try and do each player plays everybody twice kind of thing. So yeah. Like once initial game and then once again... To kind of see what the teams have changed into after leveling up and stuff.
I mean, that's what we did with ours, which was four players in the first season. But we had made it, you played the same person twice, once is home, once is away.
Okay.
Yeah.
So rather than randomizing that, you always kind of had a dedicated...
Yeah, there was a schedule, like in pro sports, right? Like you're the home team in this game, now you're the away team in this game.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then I think in playoffs, if he did it the same way as he did it this season, it was whoever had the better head-to-head schedule from the regular season was the home team.
Okay.
And if it was even, because you'd played each other twice, then you'd randomize it in playoffs.
Okay.
So when doing the league stuff, so you have the regular league play, which is all in the book, in the
the collector's edition one?
Yeah.
The rules for it are in the collector's edition book. Yeah. But there's more.
There is a league set that you can get that comes with coaches and cheerleaders. And
which we had talked about that before. The
Galactic Tour.
The Galactic
Tour. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. And that book, I think, has got a little bit more stuff for the league, doesn't it?
It's the exact same.
It's the same
stuff. It's just the thin book for it.
Yeah.
So, like the regular rule book out of the box is kind of a thin little
book. So, is playoffs different when you go into the playoffs? Is it structured different than a league?
No. So
you still make the money and you're still able to recruit and all that kind of stuff?
Okay. Yeah. So ultimately, the league play is just totally customizable. You decide how you play for your group and how you want it to work. So like I said, Rob took the lead in our league and he basically came up with the schedules and he posts the results of each round and posts who's playing who next. We basically give ourselves 2 weeks to get each game in. And then if you haven't played your game after 2 weeks, there's a forfeit or whatever. He's got some rules for it. Nice. It hasn't come
up. There's rules.
It hasn't come up very often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, if one player could totally make a game and made every effort to play and the other person just couldn't, for whatever reason, they end up forfeiting basically.
To move the league on.
Yeah, the other guy gets a win.
Just keep things moving.
Yeah.
Not a bad way to do it.
Yeah. And so you just customize the league for how you want to play. We basically have the regular season is the only games that count for most brutal, fan favorite, that sort of thing. So even though you'll get more kills and cheers and stuff in playoffs, that won't count for the league awards for the season.
All right.
But you still gain experience points. Your guys still all level up and continue to progress through playoffs, which I mentioned to you made me quite an underdog at the end of our second season.
Yeah.
Because I got way less games in the playoffs. So my opponent, who fought his way from he was low ranked in his division. We had 6 players, 3 in each division. I won my division, so I played, I think, only 2 or 3 games into playoffs. He was low-ranked in his division, so he played probably 4 or 5 games through playoffs. It was double elimination. You have to lose twice.
Yeah.
So, he lost once already before he played me in the final. That's still a game where, even though he lost, his players gained experience points. He potentially made money. Because just because he lost doesn't mean he didn't have the most cheers or an MVP to give him more income. So I was almost 300 points underdog. 295.
That's a lot of points.
That's a lot of points.
Yeah, it was good. And I used it to hire 2 deadly MVPs to just kick his butt.
So really, the league play sounds like it plays a lot like a Dead Zone campaign.
Yeah, it's absolutely campaign-style play.
Yeah.
Because that's what I've done. This is the first time I've done this whole league thing, and I'm actually kind of excited about tomorrow. However we do it, the fact that we're doing a league in a day, which at Adepticon you guys are always doing.
Yeah, we've done it twice now, I think.
The league in a night? Yeah.
Yeah, it's been at Adepticon for 2 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, it's only 4 games, so it's, not a full league experience.
Sure.
But for people who don't have the players for a league normally or the time or whatever, it gets you that league style of Dreadball.
Gets a little bit of taste.
Yeah. And honestly, league is the most fun version of Dreadball because your players change and grow and you get a little bit more than you get out of the box.
And that's where they start getting names and you start getting stories.
I could tell you right now the names. Of all but one player. I have one Jack who I think never leveled up. He warmed the bench almost the entire season.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And so I don't remember his name. So
what's your threshold, level-wise, before they get a name?
They all had names. They absolutely had names. I just don't remember his name.
He's the one on the bench that you never think about.
Yeah. And I honestly would have predicted that he wouldn't. The other Jack, I had 2 Jacks, right? I played the Mutants, and so your basic build has to include 2 guards, 2 Jacks, 2 strikers. Mm. I think that's right. And so that was my sixth player. I went with the minimum because I spent a lot of points on each guy.
Right.
They were really good. I mean, the guards were really good. You okay, Rick?
Yeah.
The guards were really good. The strikers were really good.
Mm-hmm.
The Jacks were as cheap and as boring as I could make them without being useless.
Right, right.
So they weren't garbage, but they weren't good.
Yeah.
So one of them was called Norm because his stats were fours across the board. And the other guy, the one whose name I cannot remember, he was a little better for what I think he had a speed of three, which made him as a Jack a bit better. But I can't remember his name. Because very early on, Norm got stench. So he became Smelly Norm. And Smelly Norm was part of my defense with my keeper, whose name was The Wall. So
big Pink Floyd fan.
There. Yeah, and he started as a keeper, which is something I could do as mutants. I could build him as a keeper out of the box. No one else is starting game one with a keeper. My guys are starting game one with a keeper. So my starting roster was Norm, the other Jack, whatever his name was.
Let's call him Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack.
Jack.
The
Jack,
Wall, Jack. Who was my keeper. Destruction, who was my guard out and about causing destruction. I had Buckets, who was my striker with agility 3 and skill 3.
Ooh.
And I had a Crackshot, who was skill 3 with the illegal ability. And I even modeled like a heater on his back, like a little gun at the small of his back so he could whip it out and do the illegal on the field, shooting guys in the back of the head. Yeah, so from those six, I basically spent all of my earned mega credits on new players. I bought no cards. I bought no dice. No cheerleaders. I did buy one assistant coach because I got the shock collar ability.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't use that without an assistant coach to trigger it.
Right, right.
So it sort of became like, well, they got the ability. If I want to ever use it, I really should pay for a coach. And each of the players I bought after the fact, because I could save up the money I needed, I'd sort of stat them out, know how much money I needed, and buy them when I had enough money.
Right.
I only bought three more players over the entire league. The first was named Ubermensch. He had strength 3, agility 3, armor 3,
jeez,
speed 3, and illegal.
And illegal.
So he was modeled with a great big axe in his head, all covered in blood. And he wrecked some people out on the pitch.
I imagine.
The next guy I bought was Viper. Viper was also a guard who had reach and toxic, which meant he could slam you from a hex away. You can't slam him back because you don't have reach. He has reach.
Right.
And toxic basically says, if I succeed, if I win,
mm-hmm,
you take +1 injury, no matter what your armor roll is.
Ouch.
So even if I had one success and you completely saved it on your armor, you then take one injury and you go to the one on the sub bench. So it really doesn't matter how good your armor is. You're taking one injury, which was very handy. And he came in pretty late in the playoffs. And for the very last game, I hired Project Goal. And he was a striker, skill 3, agility 3, safe pair of hands.
Hmm.
And he worked with the other guy with safe pair of hands to back and forth the ball with one action and move it down the field.
Yeah.
So
that's between such those three, nasty.
It's a nasty combo.
Yeah.
Hate
being on the receiving end of.
Yeah, I did it only once.
I just sit back and watch.
I mean, it could be abused pretty badly. Yeah. I used it once in the playoff game in the first round. Never used it again.
That's all it takes.
Yeah. Right. Because It is very, the two guys with safe pair of hands and high skill. Wow, that's a pretty spiffy combo. Even if they don't get any more fan checks from it, because we limited it to one fan check per rush if you do the 9-hex pass.
Okay.
And I wasn't doing 9-hex passes. I was just moving the ball.
Right.
It's still brutal because you get one action token and their skill is so good. They can double the pickup of the ball effortlessly.
Mm-hmm.
They can throw and catch and double effortlessly.
Right.
And that's a free action on the doubling the pickup of the ball, a free action on the doubling of the catch. And it's just free action, free action, free action, free action, free action, moving the ball anywhere you want it on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful. But between those three players, I think Ubermensch was 250 mega credits.
Ooh.
Viper was 230 mega credits. And Project Goal was 200, maybe another 230, 210 or 230. There were almost 800 mega credits, or maybe seven, almost 700 mega credits for those three players.
That eats up a lot.
Yeah. And so those three guys and an assistant coach was all I got the entire league. And my team value was over 2,000. It was like 2,150 or something at the end. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'm actually really looking forward to season 3 of our league starting in January.
Nice. And do you start baseline again? Yeah. Right from the bottom?
Bare bones rosters, 1,000 mega credits. I think I'm going to play either the Crystallins. That's really who I was planning to play.
Mm-hmm.
But then this game I played on Wednesday with the Matsudan, I was kind of like, Matsudan might be fun in the league. So I was looking at their rank up table.
Yeah.
They only have guards and jacks, which is a bit of a bummer because strikers are great. But they have, you know, the first two picks on the chart, their rank up chart is move and agility, maybe even speed, move and speed, which is their weaknesses, right?
Right,
so
right.
Immediately they can rank up and fix their weaknesses.
Gosh.
And then I think the jacks can get brush aside,
huh,
which was skill 3 and strength 3 and brush aside.
You know, just push up the field.
Yeah, push guys out of the way. Score. Push guys out of the way. Score. I think that'll be a pretty bad combo.
I'm not going to end up with my captain until playoffs.
Captains are expensive.
265 points.
Yeah, that's the Zor you're playing.
Yeah, right? I'm playing the Zor.
I'm actually painting the Zor. I'll talk about it in hobby time, but I'm painting some Zor right now.
Well, we can
hey,
transition into hobby time. Right? So, in hobby time.
Hobby time! Yay, so, hobby time.
Brian, what have you been doing?
Or
what have you seen?
What have I seen? Well, as far as what I've been doing is I quickly for our event coming up tomorrow, actually, because when I wrote the packet, I wrote it in such a way that it said you had to use your 1,000 recommended starting team rather than just 1,000 points. I had to paint up a couple more guys for my Rebs team, because it's gonna be interesting using them without a captain.
They are a tough team. I have not played them in second edition. I don't think I don't find it appealing that you only have one action token.
I don't blame you at all. Yeah, the couple games I have played with them with a captain involved
that can't catch a ball
have been interesting to say the least. It's been fun, but it is definitely a different.
Are you happy experience with the paint job?
I actually like how it turned out. Yeah. It is one of those where I look back at the sphere where my first dread ball team, and it is one of those where I look at those and then I had like a Kalishi team. And I look at those, and then like, and then here's my Rebs, which look so much better.
So I guess it's a good thing you didn't start with the Rebs.
It's probably all right that I didn't start with the Rebs.
All right.
But
I think Brian's Canadian.
Secret Canadian from Wisconsin.
Smart.
But apart from that, I did see in more of a Dead Zone side of things on the Fanatics page. I think it was Clive.
Yep.
He posted a really neat kitbash of the GCPS and some Northern Alliance, just the Northmen.
Yeah, the Northmen, human, from them.
The human clansmen. So they have big puffy parka-esque.
I saw it. They're like the winter troopers.
Winter troopers. Yeah. And then just GCPS head and guns.
I saw
and stuff.
Those guys. That was a clever mashup.
That turned out really well. Like you wouldn't know that one of them is 100% a fantasy team, and the other one is, I don't know. And the other one is a 100% you know, a sci-fi team. They blend perfectly together.
Yeah, they made me think of like the Hoth Rebellion guys. Yeah,
which might be a fun way to get some more ribs in there. I'm just saying.
Yeah, really. Like, steal some of those Imperial Assault or Legion guys and stick them in your Rebs team.
Just we got a couple extra tall guys.
Yeah.
There. Which isn't always great in a Dead Zone.
Imperial Assault's a smaller scale. It would work perfectly.
Yeah. Those are fun.
Yes.
But those were the kind of things I'd seen and had been working on. Obviously, like putting together the packet is something to do too. And also kind of gearing up. It's that time of year where those of us that are going to be running some events at Adepticon have to start putting those packets together.
Yeah.
So that's kind of next on the docket. But I am looking forward to, now that I've played the Marauders, I've been playing around with, I've got like two different paint schemes that I've been playing with. I think I mentioned in the last recording that I do want to do like a Gundam themed Zeon team of Marauders, which will be fun. The downside is it's probably going to be green on green. So it is what it is. But I do have like another Marauder, like completely within Dead Zone universe. And I'm going to have fun playing with that.
Are you running Dreadball at Adepticon again this year?
As of right now, no.
Oh, no.
I believe Andrew is running it, but that could change.
Okay.
I'd have no problem running it again. I had a really good time actually running it last year, and maybe we'll see
if you're not running it, does that mean you can play?
I did sign up for it, so.
Excellent.
And for League of the Night. Looking forward to doing that again.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
Mm-hmm.
So hobby-wise, what have you been up to, Jeff?
Hobby-wise, what have I been up to? I have a lot on my table. I've been working on a car for Gaslands. I'm about halfway through. I've got the body done. I used the salt technique to sort of weather the paint.
Where you do the base. No, you do a prime and then you put the salt on it.
Yeah, so you do. You always prime first. You got to prime. Then you put whatever you want to show through the wrecked paint.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
So I did like a brown and orange sort of mix to make a rust effect.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you throw some water on it and stick salt on there. Like,
yeah.
I use like a coarse rock salt kind of
big
salt. Not the fine grain stuff. I kind of threw it around the roof of the car and the edges of the hood and stuff. And then you spray your paint down, let it all dry, and then you brush the salt off, and you get like the sort of rust effect where the paint's all chipped away. And then I use like a sponge as well to like sponge down more rust.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few videos on doing either the sponge technique or the salt. I tried that once, I used the little fine. It didn't work for me.
the like table saw.
Yeah, it doesn't work. No. You need the like thicker, like yeah. even almost like the
kosher salt.
Kosher salt, yeah, or you could salt. Even yeah, sea salt was what yeah. I was thinking. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you broke it up, you could even use the rock salt.
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
At that time of year, just grab some out of the...
Yeah, for those right from cold weather yeah. Locations, you'll know what salt we're referring to. Stop the cars from sliding. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I'm working on the Gaslands car. I've been playing a lot of Zombicide Invader. I'm finally trying to paint a set of Zombicide stuff, so I've painted a lot of that. I'm working on a Zor team for one of the other guys in the season 3 of our league. It's my first commission paint ever.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. He's giving me some money to paint it up for him. I forgot how painful the Zor are to assemble, but I got them all stuck together. And then I spent time trying to cut off some mold lines. And now they're all primed, and so this week, hopefully, I'll get... I'm kind of aiming for about 80% done.
Right on.
Yeah, I'm going to do a combination of airbrush, contrast paint, airbrush,
and that. What do you think about those contrast paints?
I really like them, honestly. I didn't think I was going to like them.
But I because we were talking about them just before they came out.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think I was going to like them. They seemed like a shortcut that was not necessary, but they're just like a thick wash.
Yeah.
And so the way I use them is I just put them over white primer. So you get just the tone of the wash, the thick contrast, and then it settles into the cracks and you get the low the light, instant the shading.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't tried every color by any means, but the ones that I bought and have tried, I've been really happy with. It's a very fast way to get the same effect that you could get by spending more time on it. And if you don't want to spend the time, it's quick.
Yeah.
I definitely think it looks better when you still go back in and put a highlight over top of it, either with a dry brush or edge highlighting or whatever. But especially for my Zombicide stuff, I was able to paint the Survivor heroes. They look really good, I think. And I painted them like a night, like 4 or 5 of them.
Nice.
And I was really happy with them.
I was really impressed. So some other friends had shot me a video, a YouTube video of a guy doing the contrast paints over some airbrushing. He did it in 2 hours and he airbrushed and he did the highlighting with the airbrush in a little bit. And it was all in yellow. And then use the yellow contrast paint over that to warm up those highlights a little bit and change the way it looks. So it was using the same color over. It turned out amazing.
Nice.
I've really enjoyed the contrast paints.
Yeah. Mm.
They're a lot of fun.
I plan to use what I said for the Zor. I'm going to use Zenithial Primum.
Yep.
Like I've laid down the black, so I just have to put the white.
That's the correct way to say it.
Like the zenith from the sun.
Yep.
Zenithial.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, I got to spray down the white, and then I'm going to hit them with a red contrast. Because they're going to be red with like black on their hands and feet, and I'll probably just... You know, once I put the red on, I'll go in and hit it with the either white and then use the like black contrast to black it up. Or I might just hit it with the black airbrush paint to do their hands and feet. I'm going to use like a modeled, animal pattern.
Yeah.
And spray yellow. So they have like a yellow modeled pattern over the red. Then I'll go in and do some edge highlighting with like a light red or a pink or something, like blue for their eyes, black on their antennae, and that's should get them pretty much done.
They're done.
But I also ordered some clear hex bases, clear acrylic hex bases that I'm going to try gluing them on.
Really?
So, yeah, I'm going to paint the hazard front on them.
Yep.
Probably with the airbrush, because at least with the... I've been using the clear bases for my Zombicide guys. Clear acrylic. They come with like a sticker on either side, like a sheet, so when the laser's cutting them, I guess it doesn't burn it or whatever.
Okay.
You have to peel that off to get the nice clear base, but well, you could also just spray it, and it just gets the edge.
Gotcha.
Then you can peel them off, and you get a very clean painted edge.
That's clean line.
That's pretty smart.
Yeah, so I'm going to do that. I'm hoping, I don't know for sure, that the hexes have that. I'm hoping the hexes have that sticker as well, and I can just sort of mask the back of them and just spray the front to get...
That'd be handy.
Some green, some yellow, and some red for the guard, Jack, and striker, and then glue the Zor on, onto that.
Right. Nice.
Yeah.
What have you got going on hobby-wise, right?
So, I actually... My hobby time has been working with Levi, working with my son. He wanted to paint some models. He started using the contrast paints. He started working on a plague model. And then, of course, last month we did the whole Thanksgiving thing and whatnot. And over that couple weeks for Thanksgiving and the leading up till now, he's been working on, he's done a grunt bot for the Marauders. He had a blast painting it. And I finally have moved my paint area. This is total hobby time because it's no longer in my living room.
Excellent. Is it in the basement?
It's in the basement with extra lighting.
Nice.
Yeah. And I actually have everything.
Did you get some more electrical in the basement?
There's at least a power strip.
Well, there's a power strip. It's got everything plugged in that I need.
Excellent.
And then I've been working on some Christmas presents. I had some friend 3D print a couple items for my kids for Christmas. So that's what I've been working on for hobby time.
Thankfully, we aren't spoiling anything because this episode will come out after Christmas.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, in that case, I'm painting Incredible Hulk for Levi. I'm painting a Weeping Angel from Doctor Who for my daughter. And then I actually have Winnie the Pooh. With my wife's name on it.
Did you get that thing all assembled? That model was in so many parts.
It comes tomorrow. So I still have to put it together.
Good luck.
But yeah, it's... I think the cool thing is also working with the colors. Because like the Weeping Angel's all grays. Because it's that stone.
Yeah, a dry brush will look great on that.
So far I've worked with a little contrast paint, actually. Playing around with that. I've done a little bit of dry brushing, and then some slight washes over that, and then dry brushed again. And it's almost giving me that two-tone look on some of the edges.
Nice.
The bigger models, this is the first time I've done large things, like what are they called?
Like busts?
Busts. That's the word I was looking for. This is the first time I've done any kind of thing like that. But I've, like, tried to do different things, different techniques I've learned about or heard about. So we'll see how it turns out. So that's what I've been doing. So usually we would go into Dreadball after hobby time. Yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then we go into Star Saga. But I'll tell you, with having Jeff here and being able to talk all this Dreadball, I think we'll hold off on Star Saga.
Sure.
Until next month.
You know what I can say about Star Saga? I was going through...
It's the box sitting in the corner?
I've actually sort of organized it. I was playing the online version with some of the guys there. And I actually pulled it all out so I could look at the sheets and the cards and the stuff. But as I was looking around, I think it was when I was looking for my red bottles for Adepticon this year. I found a box of Star Saga stuff that I didn't even realize I had kickstarted. And it's like the neoprene mat and like the acrylic tokens. And it's an amazing box of super cool stuff. And I'm like, what? I didn't even know I had this stuff. Yeah, I was like, wow.
Slight jealousy on that one.
The look on Rick's face.
Slight jealousy on that one. Because, yeah, we have everything except for that.
You know, if you want it, I'm sure we can work something out. Because you play it. I don't play it very much or ever. So if you'd get use out of it, we can talk.
We'll talk.
Yeah. There will be negotiations.
Sure.
Off the air. But
yeah, we'll come back next month with the second mission for our mercs.
Yep.
Maybe on a neoprene mat. Who knows?
The future is out there. But yeah, and we'll be working on editing up those episodes into a little mini adventure radio show esque thing. We'll see how that goes.
Are you doing voices when you play?
A little,
sure.
I mean, it's kind of a
we go in and out of in character versus like, wait, what is this rule?
Get to the elevator.
Yeah.
Hey, so, we found it.
We found it somehow. By wandering around mostly. But
that's embarrassing.
There's only two of us, and
you knew where the elevator was, right?
Yeah, and we still took the long way and got kind of sort of lost.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So how does it work? If it's just the two of you playing, who runs Nemesis?
The Nexus is
Nexus.
The AI. We're using the AI for Nexus.
I've never tried that in my three intro games. So
it takes the Nexus player uses the deck and they structure it however they want and they do very specific things. Well, the deck also has AI rules on it. So you only do this. And when it's the Nexus turn, you flip a card and you do that.
Okay.
And then you move the closest to...
How did you find the AI? Like, is it pretty good? Like, you feel like it's challenging or...
Yeah.
I think it's really going to show more of that in the next couple missions. Simply because...
As things get harder.
The first one, we had lab techs and security guards were the only enemies that we were running into.
Yeah.
And so, like, by the end, we were getting so many, like, resupply amounts. But it's just like, well, we just have all these guys backed up at the entrances, but only so many activations to actually bring them into the field.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see a whole lot more of the threat of the Nexus when suddenly Rangers are showing up and
all that other fun
all
stuff.
All the other fun stuff that we might find down in the
And it's also interesting because most of the missions going forward are like 3 to 4 mercs and there's only two of us. Mm.
And how painted is your set you're playing with as far as the...
Our guys are painted.
As far as the lab techs and security guards and...
The board tokens are painted.
Don't they come? Like...
cardboard cutouts.
Color card art?
Card art, yeah. So we would have been playing with a fully painted set.
The irony.
But I traded that to a gentleman that didn't want to really paint it. He just wanted to play it. So I took his unpainted. So yeah, right now we had
something else for the hobby table.
Yep. which is about the size of this room right now.
I got so many games in shrink wrap.
I got so much uncertain scenery in shrink wrap right now. And I ordered more.
Yeah, but you're also moving at some point.
Yeah. So busy time.
Yes.
But yeah. So, I think is that a wrap?
Yeah, sure, that's a wrap. I told you we wouldn't do it just like that. Thank you very much for being on the podcast with us. We have fun like this every time you're down here. So,
yeah.
And of course, thank you for coming down for Dread Belt tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you two can kick my butt. Cause
we'll see.
Yeah.
what team are you playing?
My Zor.
Zor, eh? Yeah, you're screwed.
against Rebs.
Oh, you're both screwed. Because I'm pretty... You remember that mutant team I described to you guys?
Oh, no!
Come on.
I kind of brought them to play again.
Well, you really want maybe trophy, Brian and I will be back for next
show month. I'll show you the trophy as soon as we're done.
Sure.
All right, thanks for listening, guys.
Yep, take care.
Bye, everybody.